Welcome to Pauly Malignaggi. From Brooklyn to the world.
Proudly representing his hometown of Brooklyn, New York.
Pauly Malignaggi takes you inside the ring and beyond.
I'm definitely far from shy. We're going to be ranting about a lot of stuff. Not just about boxing. I'm opinionated on life in general. Many sports topics and politics.
Pauly doesn't hold back.
The two-time world champion, Pauly the Magic Man.
Pauly Malignaggi, Peter Carnes, Brooklyn for the world, Showtime Boxing. We're back for another episode. We're minus Peter Carnes, the brand new father that he is. Father the second time around. Congrats to Peter Carnes. Hopefully he'll be back with us on future episodes. So we're discussing last week's show, last week's fight, no?
Of course.
We saw that, right? The Kell Brook and Errol Spence fight. I was very excited about this fight going in. I think the fight was a very solid fight, very good fight, some good action, but also some very high-level quality boxing from both guys. Unbelievably, I mean, this is just, I say unbelievable because this is such a rare injury to have, let alone have it twice. And Kell Brook once again broke his orbital bone in the eye socket, this time from his left eye, not from the right eye. And he will once again need surgery. I mean, that is such a rare injury to happen as it is. I mean, I know I had it... as I've mentioned before, in my Miguel Cotto fight, but it is a very rare injury to happen. To get it twice in your career, to get it in back-to-back fights on both eyes, I mean, he's going to have, that means he'll now have his both eye sockets reconstructed, you know? I mean, it's pretty wild.
Pauly, how did it feel for you? I mean, you went through it, so how did it affect you in your career going forward?
Once that hanging was in, I mean, you're pretty good. I mean, I didn't have much problems with it after. The only small issue you have is you bruise around that area much easier because, you know, when you get hit on it, you're being hit on the top of that titanium, so your skin doesn't react very well when it's banged up on it, you know, so you'll get black and blues much easier and whatnot. But, you know, the darker you are, the less you see those anyway. Plus, at the end of the day, that's a very minimal thing to deal with in the overall grand scheme of things, just bruising much easier. To me, that's small potatoes. But it's just, you know, the recovery of it, the psychological effect of it, you know. Remember when Brooke got stopped against Golovkin, he was looking back at his corner like, hey, man, what are you guys doing, you know? Even though it was the right move to make. At this point, you see how psychologically it affects you. This time, when he started feeling the same kind of injury, you could tell it was on his mind, and he took that knee, you know? So the thing is, when you get this kind of damage, the psychological aspect of it, you know, it changes you. You know, you get older, you're also changing, you know? Like, I put the fight into this context. When you are young on the rise and there's great things expected of you, you are hungrier because you haven't achieved anything. Now, we're all hungry when we're young, but not everybody is good enough to combine the talent and the skills behind the hunger. So no matter how hungry you are, some guys are just doomed to be club fighters, you know? But then there's guys where there's a greatness expected of them, not just from themselves, but from everybody else because they have some super talent, you know? And so both guys are roaring lions because they're young, they're hungry, and they've yet to achieve what they have set out to achieve. And so everything in front of them, they're looking to destroy, not just beat, you know? We all go through that. You know, even I felt like that at one time. You know, people are going to say, oh, well, you can't associate punching power. People are going to say, oh, well, you weren't getting your knockouts. What were you destroying? Didn't matter. Everything I saw in front of me, I wanted to consume. I was a prick to every opponent at that point in my life. I was a degenerate. I would get in your face. I would talk trash. You don't care. You're so hungry to achieve what you set out to achieve, and you got so many people around you expecting it of you that you begin to expect it of yourself, and you will stop at nothing to get you there. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's why I was such a member of the Miguel Cotto press conferences in my career. I got on his face even at the stare down before the fight actually started, where I wouldn't even touch his gloves. Those kind of things that you're just getting in your head. You just can't stand every opponent in front of you. You're looking to blow right through them, you know? So whether you do or not, you know, obviously I lost the Cotto fight, but the prick in you is there, you know? Even Kell Brook was like this, you know, this is Kell Brook 2-3 years ago, you know what I'm saying? Where, you know, before he won the title, stopping nothing, everything great is expected of him, you know, he's not achieved it yet, he's going to go through anybody. And now Kell Brook basically ranked himself 3 years ago in Errol Spence, and that, you know, you have a kid in the same situation. Now, here's the thing, when you achieve all those things, when you start to achieve some of those things even, and you get money, and you get comfortable, you also get a little older, you get a little wiser, and you start to realize, like, hey, man, you know, I'm not going to go into that fire as easily as I would have before. And before, you had nothing to lose. It was everything to gain and nothing to lose. So, you know, you go in there and you jump in there head first into the fire and you're looking to fight your way through anything, you know? As you get older, you get a little bit more comfortable. You achieve some of your goals. You start to realize, like, man, you know what? I don't know if I need to be in this kind of situation all the time. My life could suffer, you know? And just the fact that you're even thinking these things, you're subtly becoming, as Mickey said to Rocky in Rocky III, you're becoming civilized, you know? It happens to all of us, you know? And tell Brooke in some small matter, because he didn't achieve, obviously, anywhere near the things expected of him, some of the politics, he couldn't get the right fights or whatnot, you know, his title reign wasn't what he could have been, because Chell, for me, is one of the most talented fighters in boxing. But he's still a little bit civilized. You know, you made $4 million in the Golovkin fight. You made whatever you made in the Errol Spence fight. You've made several different title defenses even before the Golovkin fight, whether they were against big names or not. You're padding your bank account, you know? You start to become just a little bit more civilized. You've been through an injury already in the Golovkin fight. Now you start to think between fights. Like, man, you know, maybe when you were in the ring at that time, you weren't thinking about it so much. But now when you're between fights and you're recovering from the injuries, you're like, man, this is really serious stuff. You know, I really can mess up my life here with these kind of injuries. You know, I remember in the Cotto fight going through whatever I needed to go through. But years later, you think I could have gone through? And I'm man enough to admit it. You think I could have gone through what I went through in the Cotto fight again? Like when I'm in my 30s as opposed to being 25 with everything in the game? No, I don't think I could have. You know, I don't think I would have had it in me to dig down that way. I noticed a lot of people on social media saying, well, Paulie, you did it. You fought 10 rounds with a broken eye socket and whatnot. Yes, but it was a different time in my life. You know, I can't assure you or promise you that I would have been able to do that later on in my career. You know what I'm saying? Just like Kell Brook, when he was stopped in the Golovkin fight, he never went down. He's looking back at his corner like, what are you guys doing stopping the fight? You know, in that moment, your mind is a little bit different, as opposed to once you go through it and you're recovering from those kind of things, you start to feel the after effects of it. Now they play on your mind when you're in the fight. You know, they play on your mind. This is why I was a little bit disappointed with so many fans criticizing. This kid just got back-to-back ruptured eye sockets, like broken eye sockets. That's crazy.
And he's going against two of the best fighters in the world, right?
It's such a difficult injury to come back from mentally. Because physically, you will come back from it. They put the titanium in there, you know, you will recover, you know? But mentally, it starts to play on your mind. Also, you get nerve damage in your face. To this day, I don't have the same feeling on my right side of my face that I do on my left side of my face, you know? So that psychologically, it plays on it. This kid is going to have both sides of his face now with busted orbit bones. You know, those nerves on both sides of his face, and him probably feel weird for the rest of his life, you know? There's little things that you don't understand what goes on after the fight. You know, right now we're sitting there talking about everybody's critiquing. Kell Brook is in surgery, or Murray recovering from surgery, or he's about to get the surgery to fix this other's eye socket. You know, it doesn't end there for him. It doesn't end on fight night for him, where he gets to go home like we all go home and, you know, just discuss the fight. You know, he's got a whole recovery process in front of him, you know, both mentally and physically. It's a tough thing to deal with, you know. More so than anything else, though, all that aside, the biggest disappointment is, as usual, and I hate to say as usual because that's why it's disappointing, boxing fans, boxing critics, all these people focus on the wrong thing. They are all focusing on Kell Brook's quote-unquote quitting as opposed to what a great performance it was by Errol Spence. Why always see the glass half empty? Errol Spence was down after six rounds, was down for me 4-2. For most people, I think he was down 4-2 after six rounds, okay? Against the guy who's possibly the best welterweight in the world, the world champion.
In his hometown.
In his hometown, with 30,000 screaming fans against you, in Errol's first world title fight of his life. Think about the pressure that he's going through in that moment. I mean, he handled it like a champ. I mean, he handled it like a seasoned veteran. Never showed emotion in his face. Never showed discomfort in his body language or his composure. Why are we not discussing this? Why is everybody suddenly saying, like, I see all over Twitter now, oh, Amir would have beat Brook. Are you out of your mind? I fought Amir Khan, and I think Amir Khan's a great fighter. Buddy, he's not going to beat Kell Brook if they fight. I'm sorry. Amir Khan cannot beat Kell Brook. There's a reason why Amir Khan made a bunch of excuses not to fight Kell Brook. Amir Khan can't beat Kell Brook, okay? So, because if he couldn't beat Kell Brook, he would have fought him already, okay? That is a major, major money fight when Kell was a world champion at welterweight, especially that Amir had never won a welterweight title in his life. Okay, so there was a lot to gain for Amir if he could win that fight. But but I'm here to take the fight because Amir in his own mind knows there's a big problem dealing with Phil Brook. So let's cut to the chase here. When we're going to criticize, let's criticize for the right reasons, and let's not criticize for the wrong reasons. Everyone can get criticized, but let's not make up criticisms just for the sake of making up criticism. You're allowed to be an Amir Khan fan and a Phil Brook fan. Just because you're a fan of one doesn't mean you can't be a fan of the other. You know, if they fight, they give you a great fight. God bless the winner. Everybody goes home. Hey, you got a night of entertainment. Just because you support Amir Khan doesn't mean you can't support Kell Brook. Just because you support Kell Brook doesn't mean you can't support Amir Khan. They're both Brits. They're both your countrymen if you're English. And you should be proud of both fighters for what they've given. Entertainment value, pride in their country, what they've represented in this generation of British fighters and this great generation of British fighters. You know, that's mainly what I'm after here. Part of the reason Kell didn't get the big fights is because he wasn't with Al Haymon. And not that Eddie Hearn's a bad promoter. Eddie Hearn, for me, is the best promoter in the world. Let's say Al's not a promoter. So, Eddie promotes you, markets you, gets you your dates. That's your vote. He can't lure anybody in there. I discussed this morning on Twitter, Tim Breckley didn't take the Brook fight. Brook is high risk, no low reward. And people are like, well, how's low reward if he's got a title? Because when you're at the name Tim Bradley has, titles don't matter to you anymore, bro. You're past that already. You've won world titles. You're at the point where you're looking for fighters that bring enough recognition to bring major money to the table. Kell Brook is too good, but he doesn't bring that major money to the table yet, you know? He needs opposition like Amir Khan. He needs to beat opposition like that to bring that notoriety. He beat Sean Porter. Sean Porter's much better than his name is. You know what I'm saying? Like, Sean Porter's a really good fighter, but his name doesn't represent what he brings to the table. So even beating Sean Porter didn't put Kell Brook's name out there, because Porter is not enough of a big name, despite the fact that he is a really good fighter. You know what I'm saying? So it has to match. Amir would have been a great fighter for Kell because you have the huge name, especially in the UK, plus the recognition that he's also a great fighter. You know, Amir is. So, you know, Kell couldn't get these kind of guys because these kind of guys have too many options, and they'd rather face guys like, in Amir's case, Canelo Alvarez, make a lot of money even if he lost and whatnot. You know, the way Amir looked at it is, hey, man, if I'm going to get beat, I'm going to get beat by a much more known entity in Canelo Alvarez than risk getting beat by Kell Brook, right? I mean, he makes all the money in the world, and you weren't expected to win anyway, so it's a win-win situation, because if you do decent, which Amir did, he did a decent job against Canelo, hey, you win even though you lose. You know, you still remain a big name. So you know, I don't like the criticism Kell is receiving, and I don't like the lack of praise Errol Spence is receiving. I don't like it. You know what I'm saying? Because this is one of those fights, and I was scared of this before the fight happened. I knew this would happen because people are just jerk-offs to the highest degree. And I was scared that the winner would not get enough recognition, and the loser would be written off way too much. And that's what I've seen since the fight ended. It's unfortunate. Boxing fans shoot themselves in the foot. It's like you're not allowed to like both fighters. It's a weird thing to me with these people.
I think people want to see those fireworks, Paul. And I think, and I'm agreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing. I just think the reason why people act the way they do is because the very end of the fight was a little bit of a letdown, maybe. And maybe they're blaming Brook for that, which I think is uncalled for. They're both, you know, look at Brook. He broke two orbital bones, but he fought two of the best fighters in the world back to back.
Brook didn't even, after the fight, he said Ron Semmy hurt his orbital bone. I rewatched the fight. I'm telling you what, he broke his orbital bone because I've had the injury. Brook broke his orbital bone in round 8. He gets hit with a big right hook inside, and that's the shot that broke his orbital bone. He didn't get breaking in round 7. So regardless, from round 8, this guy was fighting with a broken orbital. Ugh. Okay, so he still fought till round 11 with a broken orbital and took other shots in the face while the bone is already broken. So okay, so he didn't stop when the bone broke. You know what I'm saying? But now in round 11, he's exhausted. He's taking more punishment. Errol is only rising to the occasion more and more, putting more hurting on him. Now Kell can't protect himself as good as he'd like to. He knows the bone is broken because he's had the injury, so he recognizes what he's feeling inside his face, even if we don't recognize it. He recognizes it. So he knows there's a broken bone in his face again. And he knows he's exhausted and can't defend himself against this guy who's recognizing he's got an exhausted opponent in front of him and is only rising in adrenaline to put more of a hurting on him. It was just too much to go. He's 31 years old. He's made the money. He doesn't have to risk winding up in the cemetery or damaged. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry to break it to you. This was not something to criticize. I'm sorry to break it to you. Doesn't matter. Most of the people in their life will never feel what it is to have a broken orbit. They will never know what it feels like. I know what it feels like. Some people out there very rarely will find this out. Cal had it twice now, okay? You will not get out of bed if you have a broken orbit. If you break your orbit, you will go down and you will wait for somebody to call a doctor. That's what you will do. Let me tell you, that's what you will do. Nobody breaks your orbit and just hangs out like it's nothing, let alone breaks your orbit and continues to fight, okay? It's a special kind of creature to do that, because I say you're almost a creature. You're more than a human to be able to deal with that kind of pain and be able to still focus on trying to execute a game plan and hold on to a possible victory. Now, Kel lost the fight. Kel tried up until round 11. He realized he was outgunned, and again, he was only taking more damage, and he had already been through one surgery, and he realizes, I'm probably going to need another surgery. This is only going to get worse. I myself, when I had the injury, I didn't even know it was broken. I didn't know what was broken. I remember thinking at some point in the fight, you know, my nose is fine because I can breathe. I can open and close my mouth, so my jaw is fine. I didn't realize you could break an orbital bone at that time in my life. You know, I was 25 years old. I was naive. I didn't realize there was a lot of swelling. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was just trying to fight, you know? But I knew something was wrong. I mean, I realized this kind of swelling isn't normal, you know? But I just kept fighting. The bottom line is, when you're older, you know more. It's again, I think I've given this example before. When you're 20 years old, you get on a motorbike, you go 100 miles an hour. When you're 35 years old, you get on a motorbike, you probably won't get to 100 miles an hour very rarely. You know what I mean? You'll go 50 and you'll get there a little slower, but you'll realize, you'll start thinking, I may hit a pothole, somebody can cut me off, somebody, you know, there may be a sudden slickness in the road. Let me go at a more manageable speed. When you get older, you just become wiser, you take less chances. You know what I'm saying? It's just part of the maturing process. As a human being, you go through that. So as a human being, Kel is now 31 years old. Even if he's fighting, you still, those more mature thoughts still run through your mind, especially when you've been injured and you've been through it already. You know what I'm saying? So again, disappointment in the criticism Kel's getting, disappointment in the lack of praise Errol Spence is getting. I mean, that was a great performance by Errol. I mean, he didn't panic after six rounds. He was down. He didn't panic. He stayed with it. A terrific, terrific body attack. Broke Kel down. Terrific boxing for both guys. I mean, both guys were really, it was such a high-level fight. Both guys were fighting at medium range, which to me is the most dangerous range you can fight at. You know what I'm saying? Because long range, you can't fight at. It's more movement and looking to gauge your distance to step into medium range or close range. At close range, your body to body, there is skill involved, but it's also very sloppy. Like, it can get very sloppy if the fight is always at close range. And you see a lot of Mexican fighters fighting always at close range. Like a Sean Porter fight is always at close range. It can get sloppy. Good shots are landed, but a lot of the leverage on your big shots is sometimes missed out on, aside from maybe some body punches. Medium range is where you're getting maximum leverage on all your shots. These guys spent almost the whole fight at medium range. If you watch this fight, these guys spent almost the entire fight at medium range, where either guy can take a big shot at any point, yet they were both so confident and so good defensively that they were not taking a lot of big shots, even at medium range. They were able to throw them, set traps. Sometimes a big shot would land. They still wouldn't lose their positioning, though, because holding your positioning is key, because you go out of position, you're going to get set up for a follow-up. Both guys were so good, even after they would get hit a lot of times, their positioning wouldn't fall off dramatically, because they'd realize, like, if I fall off my position, this guy's so good, he's going to make me pay. Instead, if I keep my positioning, I'm going to control him, because he may not realize, he may say, oh, I can't go for the follow-up. His positioning is too good. He may counter me. You know what I'm saying? It was just, it's like so deep. It was so much in depth. I don't even know if I can explain it to you without
you are
showing you. I don't know if I can explain it correctly without actually physically showing you the depth that this fight was fought at. You know what I'm saying? It was Gotti War-esque, but not as violent, obviously, because it was just so much more talent. But they spent the entire fight at medium range. I was just so proud of these guys. I was so proud of them. I was proud of Kel, you know, because he was a fighter looking for recognition, and unfortunately, you know, he had to take on this guy to try to get it. He chose to do it anyway instead of dropping the title, moving up. I was proud of Errol because, you know, all the pressure on him to become this great champion that has been thrust upon him, and then his first world title fight, he winds up in a title fight against a guy who might be, I mean, Broker Thurman going into this fight with probably the best welterweight in the world. So a guy who might be the best welterweight in the world, you got your first title shot against him, of all people, you know? And you have all this greatness thrust upon you, and now if you lose, you're going to be looked at like a Jeff Lacy or something. Like, I saw that being brought up in the conversation in England a lot that last week, you know? So, you know, you have a lot of pressure too. So I love the way Errol handled it with so much maturity and so much poise. And even on fight night, walking into arena with 27,000 people against you, loud and vociferous, because the British fans, again, I can't say it enough, they're the best fans in the world. They make you uncomfortable if you're the road fighter. They make you feel loved if you're a home fighter. But afterwards, you appreciate them one way or another because you realize they bring the energy to the fight, you know? Errol had to deal with all this. And he dealt with it very well, you know? He dealt with it despite being down at the early part of the fight, which is not easy because mentally you start to panic when you're down. Mentally, a lot of times you realize, man, I'm down. What am I going to do to get myself back into this fight? You know what I'm saying? Like, he never panicked. He never even looked like he was panicking. You know what I'm saying? It was always like he was thinking to himself, I got this. It was all part of the plan. We knew this wasn't going to be easy, and we just keep going with it. And that's basically how it seemed his approach was.
He stayed the course.
Comfortable. You know, and that's terrific. That's a terrific quality in the guy. You know what I'm saying? I don't see enough people speaking about this. That's what gets me aggravated, bro. There's too many morons giving opinions on a sport that's too complicated. You know, you just can't do that. You can't do that because you both guys are missing out on the respect they deserve for Saturday night.
Game on! Don't miss a second of the NFL on CBS. With CBS All Access, subscribers can stream their local market games live and get full game day coverage on TV-connected devices and tablets. From Thursday Night Football to Sunday doubleheaders, we have all your NFL on CBS excitement covered. Start your free trial now at cbs.com/NFL. That's cbs.com/NFL.
Paul, let me ask you a question. So you mentioned like you can be a fan of Amir Khan and a fan of Kell Brook. That's how I feel about Errol and Keith Thurman. Now, that seems like it could be a great fight as well. I mean, we have all these great talents in the welterweight division. You think that fight's going to happen, and what do you think about it?
Well, I think Keith needs to take the rest of the year to recover because I don't think that's an easy injury to come back from, that elbow. You know, you don't want to risk re-injuring it or hurting it in training camp or whatnot, because let's face it, your training camps at this level are very, very intense, very, very difficult. So you don't want to have an injury in training camp and have to deal with it, you know, because it's going to really take away from your performance, and it's going to really probably only get worse, make the injury worse. You might have to pull out. So I think the rest of this year, maybe Thurman's not back. So I think Errol probably gets like a little homecoming kind of fight, I wouldn't say a soft touch because it's a disrespect to call it a soft touch, but somebody who's softer than Keith Thurman, okay, which basically is anybody else in the welterweight division is softer than Keith Thurman, you know? So at this point, maybe I could see, like I tweeted yesterday, maybe a Lamont Peterson type of fighter who's a great super lightweight, but at welterweight, you know, still has to kind of get in where he fits in a little bit, maybe past his prime, but still very effective. I can make a fun fight for Errol and test Errol a little bit, but you would expect Errol to come through it, obviously.
Lamont looked great his last fight.
I could see that. I could see that kind of thing. I could see that kind of a thing being brought out for Errol in his first defense. So we'll see. You know, that kind of opponent, even if it's not directly specifically Lamont, somebody in the Lamont type of thing. Some people start saying Danny Garcia or Sean Porter. And when you start saying that, you show me how much you don't know shit about boxing. Because, number one, Sean Porter is very tough. So that's not a fight you take as a tune-up going into a Keith Thurman fight. Danny Garcia just came off of a loss. Danny himself will probably not take the fight because he's looking to come back and regain momentum after a loss. So he's not looking to come back with the best welterweight in the world either, or the guy who might be the best welterweight in the world either. So when you start throwing out names like Sean Porter and Danny Garcia or even Adrian Broner as a comeback opponent, you show me you don't know shit about boxing and I can't even take your question seriously. You got to look at guys like Lamont Peterson or in that mold, you know what I'm saying? Whether they're still relevant, they're still good, they may be a little bit past their prime, and they're looking for opportunities like this where one win gets them back in the mix, but they'll probably be underdogs. That's the one where Lamont Peterson fits in. He's exactly that kind of a guy, you know what I'm saying? But he brings enough of a name where Errol can fight him, and you know, you're bringing recognition to the fight. But Errol's supposed to win the fight. It's not a gimme, but he's supposed to win that fight.
And Paul, you're mentioning, you're talking about Kell Brook. It sounded like you think he should consider retirement.
I can't tell Kell what to do because I tell you, I know what it's like to be that competitor, you know? I just feel like at this point, Kell's in a tough spot. He is a guy who's coming off two surgeries. He may have to move up to super welterweight. A super welterweight or light middle, whatever you want to call it, is not an easy weight class. For me, that's the best weight class in boxing. And the problem with light middle is you have a ton of Kell Brooks. You have a ton of Errol Spences in that. They are very, very dangerous, but their star power doesn't equivalent to their their ability in boxing. You know, there's too many great fighters at light middle, not enough stars. So now you're walking in constantly in landmines. You know what I'm saying? Constantly, constantly in landmines. At least welterweight, you had some other fighters, you know? I would love for, like, a Chuck Brook to fight, like, a Miguel Cotto. You know, I think that would be a perfect fight, but I think Miguel's going to look for more money fights. People are going to say, oh, well, he's fighting Common Guy. And when you tell me, oh, he's fighting Common Guy, and so he's not looking for bigger money fights, again, I got to tell you, you don't know shit about boxing, because Common Guy is more of a comeback fight after he lost to Canelo. So when you come back off a loss, but you're a big name, what you do is you regroup yourself, you get a win or two, and then you make yourself into a big fight. I don't know that Cotto, I don't know how interested Cotto would be in going to the UK and fighting Chell, or maybe bringing Chell over to the US, because they're both former really good welterweights, so I think the fight makes sense for both of them. But I don't know that Cotto would be interested in a guy like Chell. I don't know how much Chell brings to the table for Cotto, because Cotto's got such a huge name, and pretty much anybody in the world is interested in fighting Cotto because of the money he generates and brings
draws.
To the table.
True. So hey, we get some great potential welterweight fights in the future for us.
Yeah. Obviously, we all want to see Thurman and Spence. I think we will see it when the time is right. Probably not before 2018. I'm curious to see the comebacks of both Danny Garcia and Sean Porter, you know. You know, I'm sure there's some other guys who are, you know, looking to put their way back in the mix as well, you know. But I think there's a solid top four, top five at welterweight, and you like to see them start to interchange and intermix. I think with PBC boxing having less and less dates and less network dates, there's less time to mess about, and there's less dates to really mess about with and take tune-up fights. You're starting to see guys get matched up against each other because there's no time anymore for tune-up fights, and you're wasting dates on guys getting tune-ups. You know, you kind of have to match them up against each other. So all that everybody was complaining about PBC, now it's coming to fruition, because now guys, there's less dates available, so everybody has to fight each other, because you can't waste dates on guys just getting tune-ups, you know? So all of a sudden, everybody has to fight each other. So you started seeing Thurman versus Garcia. You saw Spence versus Brook here. They're talking about Braun versus Mikey Garcia. The days of having gimmies on PBC are kind of coming to an end, because you can't waste dates on half-ass fights anymore, you know?
What weight would that be, Paulie, Braun or Garcia? What weight would they fight at?
They're trying to make it at 140. I hear the rumbling through my colleagues at Showtime. The negotiation issue is Broner doesn't want to fight at 140. He wants it a little heavier. Mikey wants it nothing north of 140. And Mikey will do 140, but he won't go higher than that, you know? So I think that was a sticking point here. Because, you know, obviously Mikey is a lightweight, but he hasn't even been a lightweight for that long. He doesn't want to go much higher than 140. Obviously, Broner's had his issues fighting even at 140 and making the weight. So that was the issue last I heard. Was the sticking point was where the weight would fall at, you know? So that's where they're at now. Hopefully they come together. I have a friend who works in LA in the Staples Center, and this person told me that they seem to be trying to lock in July 22nd for Broner Garcia. So,
oh wow.
So that doesn't mean it's going to happen, but that means they're discussing ongoing with the Staples Center. Of course, I've also heard that discussions are going on with Barclays Center for the same fight. So it's still, that doesn't mean anything, you know. I think both fighters still have to negotiate that weight issue, and then obviously the arenas will start bidding for which arena will get the fight, you know.
And who do you like in that fight?
It's a good fight. I probably lean towards Garcia more. But I I'll get into that more if they make the fight and the ins and outs and the little details of it and the tactical aspects of it. But I lean more towards Garcia, but I don't think it's an easy fight because Broner brings a skill set to the table that really is pretty poisonous to a textbook type of boxer. Mikey was a textbook kind of boxer, hands high, great balance, great leverage on his shots. Broner's athleticism is kind of kryptonite to a textbook kind of boxer. But I still edge it to Garcia for other reasons, and like I said, if they make that fight, I'll give it some more tactical breakdown in future episodes.
All right, so now you're heading up north of the border. You want to tell us about what you're doing?
Yeah, Montreal. We're going to Montreal this week. Adonis Stevenson versus Andrew Fonfara, a rematch from 3 years ago. Everybody at home knows I'm a big soccer fan, or as we call it in England, football. You know, everybody knows I'm a huge football fan. Ironically, this fight, the first time they fought on May 24th, 2014, was the same day the Champions League final happened in that year. That year's Champions League final was Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid. Coincidentally, it was the Champions League final in 2016 as well. But that particular year, it was the Champions League final. And these guys fought the day of the Champions League final. Now, when I work with Showtime, we rehearse like the whole day before we actually do the broadcast, you know? So I don't get like the free time in the afternoon, which is what the Champions League final time it falls on in North America, because with 5-6 hours behind, the games are on in the afternoon here in North America. So I missed the Champions League final 2014. Champions League final essentially is like the Super Bowl. Okay, for all the Americans that don't know, it's bigger than the Super Bowl. I think if you compare viewerships worldwide, the Champions League final gets more viewership worldwide. So
wow.
I was obviously mad and disappointed and pissed off because I had to rehearse when the final was happening. Well, would you believe it? These two guys, the same two fighters, no less, are fighting the day of the Champions League final again. What the hell? It's like fighting for America. It's like, to put it in comparison to America, it's on the same. It's like two guys fighting on Super Bowl Sunday every time they fight. Why would you fight on Super Bowl Sunday? Why? Why would you do that? Man, ruining my life. I got to rehearse. Now, when the Champions League final is on, I got to be rehearsing, and I'm going to miss it. And this time, to make matters worse, Real Madrid's back in the final again, coincidentally. They're playing Juventus, who's an Italian team, and I always go for my Italian teams. Shit! Pissed off.
Can't you ever get a DVR, man?
Yeah, but it's not the same thing. I mean, come on. You know all the Twitter. You know I'm going to want my. You know I'm going to want all my Twitter fans giving me updates, you know?
Just shut the phone off.
No, I want the updates. How am I going to live not getting updates? I don't even know. The game's on. I don't know what's going on. I need Twitter updates. I got the best followers in the world. Most of them from England and the UK. You know, they're all football fans, too. I want the updates from them. You know what I mean? I'm going to be living for the updates because I'm going to be stuck in rehearsal not being able to follow the game. So, anyway.
You poor guy.
I know. Think about it. The Americans just can't understand. It's, I have to compare it to the Super Bowl, but it's just even bigger than the Super Bowl, which is hard to believe for Americans. But anyway, so having said that, going back to the fight, I think the first fight was a great fight. Both guys were down. Terrific fight. Adonis started fast. Alfonso closed the fight stronger. Adonis got the decision. He blew too big of a lead early part of the fight. This time, and mind you, I love both of these guys. I'm friendly with both of them. Have a ton of respect for both guys. I think they're going to make another fun fight. But I got to say, I know, you know, sometimes I give an upset pick and it didn't happen like with Uscategui Darrell, but obviously you saw how dangerous Uscategui was. You know what I mean? He was up in the fight when he got stopped. So
he was going to win that fight.
This is another one of those situations where I think that upset is possible. Fonfara gave Adonis hell the last time they fought. Now, granted, Adonis has only won since, but he hasn't raised his level of opposition very much. As a matter of fact, I don't think he fought anybody as good as Fonfara since he fought Fonfara. Fonfara kept his opposition decent. I mean, he beat Chavez Jr., which to me doesn't count. It's not much of a win, more so than it is of being a guy with a bigger vacation. But he did lose to Joe Smith. So people are going to say, oh, he lost to Joe Smith. Joe Smith is still a big puncher. Styles make fights. It is what it is. I have a feeling Fonfara can grind down Stevenson. I don't think at Stevenson's age, he's comfortable financially. He's been champion for a while. I don't know if he's going to be willing to dig as deep as he was willing to dig 3 years ago, which still, even 3 years ago, Fonfara dug deeper than him as late in the fight. He was taking it to him. So I think an upset is really in the cards here. I really think Fonfara may be able to get this win this time and become the WBC heavyweight champion. Obviously, it's a close fight, tough fight to call. I love both guys. I think they're great entertainers, great fighters, and more importantly, they're both really cool and good guys. So I wish them the best both, but I think Fonfara, if you ask my opinion, I had a pick. I think Fonfara gets the upset here. Granted, if it goes to the scorecards, you know, in Canada, it's possible that, you know, Stevenson may get it close regardless. But if I had a pick who I think has the advantage going in, I think it's Fonfara on Saturday night.
Yeah, and he just beat Chad Dawson recently as well.
And yeah. He showed how much he's willing to still dig deep. He was losing that fight, came back, and Chad, no joke, man. And Chad was a good fighter. Chad's an underrated ex-world champion, man. I mean, slick, smooth boxing southpaw, you know what I'm saying? Fonfara had to dig in and get that win after being behind in the fight. So it shows he still has a lot of character left, because as you get older, you're less willing to go through that hellfire to get that win. But Fonfara still showed he has that grit and determination. I'm not sure Stevenson has as much of that left. He's comfortable, he's chilling, and that's sort of a dangerous place you're playing at. You know, when you're at that level, you need literally, you're in these big 50-50 fights. I forgot I'm quoting here, but I read this quote recently, and I thought it was so true. When you're at this level, you're in a bunch of 50-50 fights like we have on Saturday night. Literally, it takes just 1 or 2% loss of motivation to make the difference in a fight, you know? And I think that makes a difference Saturday night. I think Fonfara comes in more motivated. I think Stevenson is more content to where his life is and his career is at this point. And I think maybe we have a changing of the guard. But we'll see. We'll see Saturday night. I still expect a fun fight, a good fight. And it better live up to the hype because they're making me miss the Champions League damn final.
Is that the only fight that's being televised by Showtime?
I believe we got Eleander Alvarez against Jean Pascal. Eleander Alvarez on the rise in Canada. Jean Pascal obviously is a known entity. Has been a solid world champion. Eleander, though, is a guy who's hungry, and he's gotten coming off a big win over Lucien Boutte. He's gotten a couple of other wins. I think he also beat who's the South African guy, man? Who's that South African guy? I forget his name now. It's a pretty good fighter. He fought Kovalev, too. We went to distance with Kovalev. Eleander beat him as well. I think it was a card that I worked, actually, about a year and a half ago when Eleander Alvarez beat him as well. I think I favor Alvarez in the fight. I think it's another situation where he's going to want it more, I think. I think Jean Pascal was a very good fighter. I think he's still a good fighter. But I worry that Pascal is probably more worried about his Hollywood lifestyle than he is about boxing. The way he kind of comports himself. Alvarez is still hungry. He hasn't really achieved much in the way of what's expected of him or what he expects of himself. I think he grinds this fight, but Pascal will be dangerous. He's very athletic. He's a very good fighter. And I think it's another solid TV fight.
Yeah, and Alvarez recently beat Boutte.
Yeah, he recently stopped Boutte, yep.
Yeah. All right, cool. We're looking forward to those fights, man. Sorry you're missing the Champions League.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm missing the Champions League. So hopefully all my UK fans out there give me updates on Saturday. And also keep staying on the Showtime Boxing Twitter. Keep breaking their chops. Steven Espinosa, keep breaking his chops. Keep breaking Chris de Blasio's chops. Break all their chops because we need to have Brooklyn to the World on Showtime Boxing much more frequently. We need these guys to fund us and bring us to the lanes at the press conferences so we can bring you guys shows right from the scenes of the crime and make them even more fun. So hopefully we'll get treated a little bit better, just a little bit better. We're not asking for the whole pie, you know. We're just asking for a little piece.
Oh, we also want you to rate us 5 stars, leave us some comments on iTunes. That definitely helps the show. Hey,
yeah,
did you get the?
Because we don't have time. Otherwise, we don't have time. I'm just too busy. Peter's a new father, so we need a little bit of motivation from Showtime. We need a little push from Showtime, and you guys are the driving force behind that push. If you guys want.
Hey, Paulie, did you
keep doing your show once in a while, you know?
Paulie, did you hold little Pietro? Did you hold him?
Did you hold him? Of course I held him. He weighs like six. He weighs like 6 ounces. Well, I mean,
I know you're physically able to carry him. I'm just asking if you held him. He's cute. He's a cute baby.
I held him. He's actually cute, man. Yeah. He's actually really cute.
Takes after his mother. Yes.
Yeah. No, you look a lot like Pete, actually.
That's true. A thin Peter. Yeah.
Good kid. But so congratulations to Peter Carr.
Yes, sir.
And we'll be back next week, all right? And hopefully Peter will be on the show as well.
Thanks for taking the time.
All right, over and out.
All right, man.
Good luck. Rate us 5 stars.
See ya.